Welcome to NCBA's Cattleman's Call podcast with host Lane Nordland.
All righty, everybody. Welcome back to another conversation here on the Cattleman's Call podcast. Lane Nordland, happy to be with you here today. CattleCon 2024 was held in Orlando, Florida. And we had cattle producers from across the nation and, in fact, the world come and attend CattleCon. It was a great time there in sunny Florida for all that came down. And I'm excited about today's show. We're going to catch up with some of the gentlemen from Telus Agriculture here today. And just a shout out to them, because you can advance what's possible in your operation by improving animal health and expanding the limits of production and profitability. Telus Agriculture can help you track your animals' attributes from conception to harvest and build cost-effective feedlot strategies. Visit telus.com/agriculture to learn more. And that's one thing I love about Cattle Convention in the NCBA trade show. There's just so much to learn. There's so much that you can take back, whether you're cow-calf, feedlot, background, or whatever it might be. That's why there's so much to be had here at the NCBA trade show in the Cattle Convention itself. I should get to introducing our guests here today. We're excited to have Keith Jim, founder of Feedlot Health Management Services and senior leader of animal agriculture at Telus Agriculture, joining us. Matt Quinn joining us. He is the team lead and production consultant, and Calvin Booker, general manager in services and research, along with animal agriculture. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us here today during CattleCon.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, I guess I like to ask folks, how many cattle cons have you attended in the past? Calvin or Keith, do you want to go first?
Oh, I've probably been coming to NCBA for, I'm going to say, 20 to 25 years. Yeah, a long time.
And they just keep getting better and better.
They do, yes.
And Matt, for yourself?
I think probably 10 or 15.
Yeah. Calvin?
Yeah, I'd be the same. Probably about 15 of them I've been to, so.
Well, and I should point out that not all of us are from the United States either. So first off, I'll have you introduce yourself there, Calvin, and where you call home.
Yeah, so I'm based out of the Okotoks office, so it's just south of Calgary, and I'm a Canadian, but I spent quite a bit of time both in Canada and the U.S., so.
And I was surprised. It's actually about the same temperature as home in Montana for me right now, and probably the same up north there in Alberta, but it's not warm in Orlando this week. The sun's shining, but it's not warm.
Agreed. We've been fortunate. We had some Chinook weather in southern Alberta, so it's been temperatures have been warmer than lots of the parts of the U.S. this last week or so.
We were 48 below. Yeah, we were talking about that, too, on our call here a few weeks ago. 48 below in Montana with that wind chill at our place, and then after that, 4 days later, it was 50 above. Those Chinooks come through, and we have no snow right now. My corrals are just mucky. And, yeah, we have no ice in that ground right now. But, Matt, for yourself, let's talk about home.
Yeah, so I'm a native of Texas and live in Amarillo, Texas right now, kind of work in and around the Texas Panhandle and all throughout the U.S.
Keith, for yourself, where's home now?
Similar to Calvin, I live just south of Calgary. And go to our office near Okotoks on a daily basis.
Yep. Well, we're not too far apart. I'm near Great Falls, Montana, is where I call home. So I always, about this time of the year, all the Albertans are coming through to go down to Arizona in winter down there. So the hurting Albertans heading south is what I always say.
Yeah, I drove by there just on the weekend because I was in Sun Valley skiing. So.
Well, as we kind of get to our conversation here today, Key, first off, are you getting inducted to the Cattle Feeder Hall of Fame this week?
That is correct. Tomorrow.
What does that mean to you?
A lot, right? I've been involved in the cattle feeding industry for 40 years, and it's a fantastic honor, and I'm very much thrilled and feel very privileged to be receiving this recognition.
Well, congratulations and have a great time tomorrow when that induction takes place. But, you know, for yourself, let's talk just a little more about you're founding a Feedlot Health Management Services. What got you on that path?
I'm from a ranch in the interior of BC, so from a cow-calf background. And as I went to veterinary school, I was looking at what the various options would be. When I graduated, I saw that there was a service opportunity that wasn't really being filled in Western Canada. The feedlot industry was just really getting going, and starting to become a substantial business. And I felt that, you know, it was being underserviced, that people needed to make it a specialty and get involved in the industry and provide a, you know, a service for a niche part of the beef business that, you know, could represent a big economic opportunity if you could get and develop service packages and a consulting model that fit the emerging feedlot industry.
And for our colleagues here, Matt, how did you find yourself in your position? Talk about your background a little bit too.
Yeah, so I actually grew up on a feedlot. My family has a feedlot, it's still in operation today. They still run it. And so I kind of always knew I wanted to be involved with the industry and part of the feedlot industry. Just didn't know exactly what that was going to be. Kind of figured out partway through college that I had an interest in the nutrition side of things. So went to school focused on that. Got out of graduate school with my degree in nutrition, ruminant nutrition, kind of focusing on the feedlot side of things. And from there, went to work for a company, an independent consulting company, as an independent nutritionist. Got to see one side of the business, working with feedlots, backgrounders, things like that. I also got to spend some time with a company as a tech services nutritionist. Okay, and so in that role, got to spend time with veterinarians, with nutritionists. Got to see a lot of different consulting models. Got to spend a lot of time with in-house nutritionists, with staff nutritionists, got to spend some time with Feedlot Health and saw their consulting model and their consulting approach, saw veterinarians and nutritionists and PhD animal scientists working together, and realized that that was a pretty amazing model and wanted to be a part of it. And the opportunity came up and I jumped on it.
Awesome. And Calvin, for yourself?
Yeah, well, I'm a farm kid as well. I grew up in Saskatchewan, just south of Saskatoon, so, you know, not too far north of where you're at. And I was going to be a grain farmer, and my mother suggested quite strongly that maybe I should go to university, and so she did. But I became interested in the data side of things when I graduated from veterinary school, and I was interested in dairy cows, not really sure why. Never worked on a dairy, but I was. So I went to Cornell University for a year and interned, but really realized that my passion was the herd as the production unit, and I went right back to grad school to get the skills needed to do that. I was very fortunate that part of my grad school stuff I did working with Key and the team at Feedlot Health. So when I graduated 1992, I went to Feedlot Health. Only real job I've ever had in my life. And can't wait to get to work every day. Monday's my favorite day of the week. And I was fortunate at that time, some of the innovations that Key had put in place on the data collection side, they were just at the stage where they needed somebody to analyze all that data. So it just sort of came together. And it's been a fun and interesting evolution over time.
So are you still a Rough Riders fan or a Stampeders fan?
Oh, Rider fan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, true green.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. We for our listeners that are unfamiliar with Canadian football, in parts of Montana, sometimes the only radio station you would get was Regina 620 CKRM. Regina 620 CKRM. And you'd get to talk about all the, what's the Rough Riders score going to be this week? And you can call in, get in the pool. And, yeah, I mean, it was a part of my childhood growing up there. So
exactly.
Are you a Stampeder then?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. If you live in Calgary, you're a Stampeder fan. Even even if you come from somewhere else, I don't know what happened to Calvin, but the rest of us are.
Well, obviously, as we talk about feedlots, I always think of Bill Rischel. Have you met Bill from Nebraska? A great rancher and Angus producer down there. And he was one of the first podcasts that we ever did on the Cattleman's Call. And he just said that he wasn't tough enough or brave enough to get into the feedlot business. And as a cow-calf guy, you know, we always like to complain a little bit and whine about prices and this and that. But really, that feedlot, that is the riskiest side of the beef industry. And, you know, we think of this, there's so many ebbs and flows when it comes to making adjustments in feedlots. And but we know that progress does take quite a bit of time to catch up. And so, Key, I guess when you look at this, what are the challenges that cattle feeders are facing here in 2024?
Well, I think the challenges we faced over the last 40 years, we continue to face today. It's kind of like the same movie over and over again to some extent, right? You always have, as you mentioned, a very significant element of market risk, right? Markets are extremely volatile, and in the last 10 years, they've probably been more volatile than they've been historically. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, in 2023 in a period of about 6 weeks, you know, the futures market declined $30 a hundredweight. Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, you had a change in value of your inventory like by about $450 a head.
Yeah.
Right. So just some really violent swings in prices. And then we've had, you know, violent swings in cost of gain, you know, with corn in any given time seems to range from $4.50 one moment, and you can wake up and it's $7. Mm-hmm. Yep. Right? So you've got, you know, really big changes in cost of production and changes in market and changes in your profitability. So, you know, market risk is a big factor. And then weather related, you have a significant amount of production risk related to when feedlots get muddy or things get very cold and cattle don't perform as well. And as you mentioned, in the first part of the year, we had a very big dose of that mm-hmm. throughout most of the cattle feeding areas in North America.
Yeah.
You know, when you get events like that, it can impact your closeouts for a period of up to 90 days and, you know, and change your P&Ls, you know, weather alone by another $100 or so a head.
Yep.
Right, so you always have those overarching risks of production and markets, and those things really don't go away. And then, you know, we had things like the COVID event, right? We had things like plant fires, right? Seemingly like a cluster of black swans at times, right? Yep. Appears and, you know, causes quite a bit of chaos.
Yep. Calvin, any thoughts on that, what these challenges are looking like from your perspective?
Well, as Keith pointed out, you know, the things that we work with producers on, we really can't control the market. We really can't control the weather. But we can control or have some influence over the day-to-day production and animal health things that happen in the feedlot. So we try and focus on working with the teams at feedlots to be able to focus on the things that are really within their control,
yeah,
to try and optimize those and hope that kind of, if you stay the course on those things, the other things are going to ebb and flow as mm-hmm. they go. Key mentioned the weather events that we had, you know, beginning of the year here. But for the 3 months prior to that, I mean, we had excellent feeding conditions, above normal feeding conditions. Yeah. So cattle were gaining faster, et cetera. So then Matt and his team having to work on how do we get cattle that we thought were going to ship in December, and they're really ready to go in November. And how do we manage some of those kinds of things?
Yep. What was that process like?
Well, I think it's a challenge. I mean, that's a good problem to have, right? Whenever cattle are gaining faster and performing better than you expected, but at the end of the day, it's still a problem, right? So you got to be a little bit agile. You've got to be able to be flexible with your protocols, with your endpoints, right? And that's really, I think, one of the things that we do best is we try to work with producers to kind of maximize or build protocols, build things around what's going on in that specific operation. And so to be able to flex those endpoints, be able to flex those marketing dates and kind of move things around that way, I think is one of the things we help producers with.
And I think that, you know, big part of that starts with having information and accurate information so that you can act on it and manage. And so rather than sort of doing things by guess and by golly or looking over the fence, having systems that collect data, organize it so we can put it in producers' hands so they can make better decisions. That's mm-hmm. that's part of what
yeah,
big
absolutely.
Part of what we do.
Yeah. Having the right information at the right time so that you don't get to that point and the day you sell the cattle or the day you ship the cattle is the day you realize that, oh, we're way off the mark here,
yeah,
right? So having that real-time information and working with producers on a day-to-day basis to utilize the data that they're collecting kind of on a day-to-day basis to understand what's actually going on, what are our production parameters here, and if we start to get out of bounds, how can we steer the ship back in bounds, yep, right?
And Key, as we look at technology, and again, gathering that information, having it, and understanding that, can you believe just how much information we have now and just how technology has advanced the feeding industry and the efficiency of cattle as well over the past 40 years?
Oh, it's been quite remarkable. When I first started, you know, we thought that it was a major innovation to start collecting data shoot side, and it was, mm-hmm. right? But if you look at all of the data that's been collected now in multiple locations throughout the feedlot, how that data is taken and, you know, put into a centralized system, and how the consultants are able to work with that data and create actionable items that will enhance production is really quite remarkable. You know, if you look at it in the broad context, you know, feedlots are pretty sophisticated and complicated systems that probably utilize more technology, innovation, and data analytics than most sectors in the beef cattle industry. Right, they're at the leading edge of many of the technological innovations that are available.
And as those technologies changed, and obviously feedlot health management services is a part of TELUS Agriculture now, but how did that help you in just making a change when you're looking at the health aspect in our feedlots and utilizing those technologies?
Yeah, I think that our involvement with TELUS as the company was acquired, and making that transition, it's been very positive, right? Because TELUS had a much broader play in mind in terms of, you know, connecting the value chain, going from, you know, from the birth of the animal to the processing, or from the seed right to the bread, right, and sort of the whole across the value chain approach, and allow us to, you know, use our data systems that we had been developing, but more importantly, having the resources to refine and develop what we had been working on, but accelerated mm-hmm. at a rate that, you know, wasn't possible historically.
Yep.
Right. So just really the acceleration of the technologies and the data collection and the overall capabilities of the company have improved substantially here over the last 3 years, and allows us to, you know, better service our global customer base.
And I think if we step back 40 years to when mm-hmm. Key started, and even when I came along, you know, 5 or 10 years later, the first data collection systems that we put in place really just let us accurately describe what was going on, and that dispelled a lot of perceptions that we had, that our customers had, about what really was happening or wasn't happening, or what were the risk factors for respiratory disease, as an example, really helped us get focused. That simple descriptive stuff, even today, as we look through various challenges and opportunities, that simple descriptive stuff is particularly valuable. And then you layer in all the different things that we can do with more complex analytics and benchmarking and looking at things over time. So it's actually quite remarkable in all aspects of the production system.
So what challenges are feedlots facing in regards to animal health and production here in 2024, other than those factors we just discussed, weather, price of corn? What are some of those other key areas that maybe the cow-calf guy doesn't think about but is so vital to the operation on the feedlot level? Matt or Calvin?
Yeah, I think there's a number of challenges. We discussed several of those. One that I don't think we've discussed yet is labor. And I think labor is a huge, huge challenge in the industry right now. And it seems like we describe things now like pre-COVID and post-COVID, right? And the labor challenges associated with those things. And I think one of the things that we focus on quite a bit, at least on the production side and the animal health side, is training those new labor. The new labor force, I guess, or the new folks that are coming into the feedlot. So working with them within each individual operation to try to help them execute and try to help them deliver on the protocols that we set up within each operation, I think, is a big one. Obviously, you know, there's a few that come to mind. One being a more recent one is, you know, FDA kind of changing their interpretation related to the use of traditional implants in feedlots, right? We're very fortunate in TELUS that we've done quite a bit of historical research looking at a number of different implant programs and things like that. So for our clients, we were able to pivot on that pretty seamlessly. But I think there were some things that we had to alter some protocols that we had to change at the feedlot level in order to deal with kind of some of those more recent changes. And then the things that we talked about earlier relative to the markets, endpoints, you know, cost to gain. Mm-hmm. When corn prices are low and cattle prices are high, changing our endpoints or optimizing our endpoints to help improve profitability for the cattle feeder.
Yeah, and then I think if you think about disease things that we have to deal with, I mean, the big one, and everybody knows this, is respiratory disease, and trying to manage that, and in different populations, there's different risks and different periods of risks for that. There's been a lot of use of the conventional beef breed semen in dairy herds, and so you've got these beef on dairy crossbreds that come into a lot of different feedlot operations, and they have challenges with respiratory disease like every other. But the risk profile and timing of that is a little bit different mm-hmm. than what we'd see with conventional beef cattle, you know, weaned off the cow and come to a feedlot, or yearlings coming into a feedlot. And then the other big topic is the whole liver abscess prevention stuff. And especially as we feed cattle longer and they're on the high grain diets longer, then we have more challenges with liver abscesses. And that's further compounded or made more complex as FDA CVM is looking at trying to define durations of use for some of the antimicrobials that we currently use. And part B, trying to find alternative non-antimicrobial interventions or prevention methods for liver abscess that actually make a difference. There's lots of them out there that people have good ideas that people have come up with. Most of them don't move the needle very much. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of some of the big ones that we're working on currently.
So how does somebody out there start to work with TELUS? And you know, because like there's so much data that can be collected and go through, and it can be overwhelming. I love analytics on podcasts and streams, but I think I'd become a little overwhelmed with some of the data if they were put in front of me. But again, I'm a broke cow calf guy. I really can't talk. But Matt, from your perspective or your insight, how can a client start to work with a consultant with TELUS?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of different ways that other companies might do things. I think the way that we would do it, so we would go into an operation, try to understand exactly what's going on in that operation. So spend time learning about the operation, learning the challenges and things like that. We alluded to it earlier. Key alluded to it earlier that you know feedlots we collect a lot of data on a daily basis, and that's really good. But where we probably don't do a great job at times is utilizing that data in a package or packaging that data into something that we can use to make decisions based off of, right? And so what we would do is we'd go in and use our technologies, our data collection tools, to try to understand what's going on a day-to-day basis in a real-time situation, utilize that data to help drive protocols along with our research, right? So a lot of the commercial research and in-house research that we've conducted in the past, we use that to build our protocols, establish what those protocols are for each operation, kind of tailor those protocols to that operation, and then work with them on the execution of the protocols and monitoring what's going on in that operation through our data collection software tools and things of that nature to kind of customize things specifically for each operation.
So what does that, what do those tools look like? Can you be on your phone? Is it desktop? Because again, technology changes so dang fast.
Yeah, so there are a lot of desktop-based tools as well, and then I think we're working on the evolution of some tools that can be utilized on the cell phone and things like that through applications. So I think you know ease of use of data collection is a big thing as well. So we need to have tools available to cattle feeders out there that allow for them to easily utilize that data and easily collect it.
Calvin?
Yeah. Well, I think the other thing to add to that is, as Matt said, most commercial feedlots have got various different software packages in place, especially on the feeds and feeding side of things, et cetera. So in those cases where we focus on is how can we help to make that data more usable for the producer to monitor what's going on and to have actionable items come out of that as we collectively identify things that might need to change or might need to be tweaked here and there. Mm-hmm. So I think those are some of the big things on that thing. I think the other side would be we're fortunate. We have a big team of people that are veterinarians, ruminant nutritionist, animal scientist, growth production. So really trying to figure out, well, what kind of service does a particular customer need? Because some of them might only be interested in animal health services. Some might only be interested in nutritional services. Some might be looking for the whole thing or some different aspects. So I think really trying to identify with a customer what's their needs, and do we have something on the consulting side or on the tool side that can help them be more efficient and more profitable in their operation.
Well, exactly. And as we continue our conversation with the gentleman from TELUS, I just want to say when it comes to your feedlot, every decision you make is a big decision. When you work with TELUS Agriculture, you gain a team of industry-leading professionals who are able to analyze every aspect of your operation to optimize animal health and production, helping you make informed decisions that impact your markets. Visit TELUS.com/agriculture to discover how we can help you drive net profitability in your operations. And again, net profitability is so important, but there's so many different stakeholders out there to have an efficient feedlot to keep animals healthy. Matt, what are some ways that producers can work with their DVM or their nutritionist to have, you know, better outcomes when it comes to animal health and utilizing TELUS as well?
Yeah, so I think the most important thing is to have an agreement in the philosophy of how you're going to make decisions, right? Between the consulting vet or nutritionist as well as the producer, right? So there's got to be a philosophical alignment on how you're going to do that. And then the next thing, I think you've got to have established sets of parameters and protocols for operation, right? Pick some key performance indicators that you kind of want to pay attention to make sure that you're monitoring those on a regular basis to ensure that execution's being completed and the operation's generally driving in the right direction. I think in order to establish those things, you have to record the data, collect the data, and put that into a package that can be easily understood and utilized at the production level to try to overcome what challenges may occur, right? Whether that's weather related, grain related, labor related, etc., right? And so having all of those things in place along with tools and the right philosophy in terms of how to make decisions, I think is important as well.
Now, Key, as we talk about all this technology and the advancements and the tools that are out there for producers, from the feeder perspective of it, you know, what is next for the feedlot industry in terms of utilizing this technology, pushing ahead, and not being afraid of that brave new world that of what could be tomorrow? What are your thoughts on that? Where's the feeding industry going to go in another 40 years, in your opinion?
Well, I think there's always going to be the relentless push to improve production. And, you know, we've done a pretty good job of that over the last 40 years, but it's going to continue to be, a difficult competitive business, and the survivors are going to be the ones that, you know, constantly innovate, you know, adopt the appropriate technologies, right, and continuously look for ways to, I think there's some very exciting things happening with respect to additional revenue generation potential for feedlots, and principally that's coming through renewable natural gas biodigesters. Mm-hmm. You know, just that they become a very important part of having a thriving dairy, right? Feedlot operators need to be having a hard look at biodigesters as a revenue opportunity, as part of sustainability, as parting being able to cash in on, you know, the carbon credit boom, right? They need to be looking at that pretty hard. And then one of the biggest changes in feedlot design or potential changes in design that's come along is roller compacted concrete. And depending on your environment, you know, that could be a game-changing technology. Right, expensive.
Expand upon that, because that's over my head right now.
Yeah. So I think you well know that cattle don't like mud, right? And feedlot cattle really don't like it because it causes them to, you know, weight gain to slow down, conversions to go up. So a lot of the cattle feeding areas, you're fighting the weather, right? And if you put them on concrete, you can mitigate a large amount of the weather problems. And when we think about concrete, we think, oh, that's pretty expensive. Roller compacted concrete is the same constituents as regular concrete, but it's laid down differently, right? It's put down and then it's kind of rolled and compacted. So you don't have rebar in it. You don't have things like that. Its breaking strength is quite similar to regular concrete, and it's been utilized in road construction and in airport runways and in parking lots and things like that. And it's just something that the feedlot industry is looking at really hard. It's about a third the cost of regular concrete, so it makes it within the realm of economic feasibility, right? But it's in my mind, it's a game-changing technology.
Well, again, it shows my ignorance here,
Calvin. Well, and then I think if you go the other side of the technology side, Keith touched on the biogas side of things, but I think the whole, as the world focuses on sort of reducing our greenhouse gas emissions and the intensity of emissions from all aspects of industry, but particularly in agriculture, there's a whole wave of work being done to look at ways to mitigate methane production. And a lot of those look like they're going to come through feed additives of some sort. In the U.S. here and in Canada, I mean, if we look at beef production, I mean, 70% of the methane comes from the mother cow herd because they're out, eating forages and stuff which have a high potential to produce methane. But it's very difficult to get those types of technologies into them on a daily basis. In the feedlot, we can get them into it on a daily basis, and so we got to try and maybe figure out how to do that. But we need to do that in a way that's cost-effective and creates an opportunity for the feedlot producer, cattle owner, to capitalize on those reductions through the carbon markets. Yeah. So that's one.
Yeah.
And then the other technologies, there's all sorts of wearable devices that are coming down the pipe, cameras, sensors, monitors, all sorts. The one thing I know is they probably can't all work, but some of them are going to work and they're going to be cost effective to use. And trying to sort through that and figure out for each operation and type of operation, what kinds of these sensors and things are really going to be cost effective for individual producers to put in place. And going through that and figuring out you can't buy them all and figure it all out at each operation. That's not going to work.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the big opportunities, is trying to sort through that and figure out which ones are going to be there. And it'd be a little bit like, it's going to be a combination of both technology and also scalability stuff. If you think back to the, your VCRs and movies and whatever, Beta was a better technology, but VHS won, and neither one are, they're in a museum someplace now, right? So,
I still have the combo DVD VHS just in case you need to watch one of those old Disney movies on VHS.
Exactly.
One of the other things that, sort of a file worth monitoring, that's dominant in the news and in the tech world is the use of AI, mm-hmm. right? And I think that in agriculture we probably developed a fair bit of skepticism in terms of where AI is going to lead us. However, it's going to lead. Make no mistake about it, it's going to lead somewhere, right? As these if you read some of the listen to some of the podcasts from those that are very informed about the AI space, I think it's going to be the most transformative technology the world has ever seen, right? And to think that in agriculture we're going to be not affected, don't think so, right? It's going to be, our first looks at, AI to enhance what we're doing, I have to admit, haven't been, seemingly that productive. But it took a while for the airplane technology to get right, before they could actually fly, right? And so they had to fall off the cliff several times, right? But, this will all change. And I can't figure out exactly where it's going to fit, but it over the next 10 years, it's going to fit somewhere, and I think the types of changes that it can make aren't going to be incremental. A lot of the things we do are incremental, progressive. We get a little better at everything each day. Somewhere along the line here, it's going to be an exponential jump, right? And whether that's the synthesis of all this data around agronomy that allows us to make some big breakthroughs in crop yields and things. I don't know what it is, right? But it's going to be something.
So where does TELUS fit into this as we explore AI and all the unknowns? But we do have some knowns in success as well. So where does TELUS fit in this when we're looking at more of that opportunity for efficiency in the beef industry?
So I think there's a couple of spots, and I'll start it off, and Matt, you may kick some others in there. But I mean, one of the things that our team does really well is that we're actually able to help producers evaluate these different kinds of technologies and actually figure out which ones actually make meaningful, cost-effective differences in their operation. We've got a really large applied research side of things that we work with producers to answer individual questions that they have that are tailored and measured in their operations. So that's one of the ways. That's a fairly straightforward way, but that's one. Two, I think as these new technologies come down the pipe, trying to sort through which ones really could possibly create this, you know, everybody's got an idea that this is going to, you know, if you put this in place, it's going to make you $20. Well, if we had all of those $20 that everybody said would happen all the time, we wouldn't have to be on this podcast today. and it turns out most of those $20 aren't there. So I think that's another. Then the third way would be as we explore the AI side of things, as Key pointed out, being part of this larger organization of TELUS, TELUS International has the whole, you know, infrastructure and those types of things to do the back office processing and do the artificial intelligence and the things that go with that. So we're fortunate being part of that larger interconnected company that we get to see some of the things that we wouldn't get to see till many stages down the road if we were you know, working on things on our own. So I think that's the third way. And I don't know if you've got others, Matt or Key.
Well, again, it's exciting. A little bit scary, though, too, but it's all about just having more efficient beef, and that goes all the way down the supply chain, and we're going to continue to see innovations on the cow-calf end and on the feeding end and the processing end, but, you know, that's why we're here down here at CattleCon, too. We're here to network. We're here to learn. We're here to be better stewards of our land, and, again, that's also a story we have to tell our consumers along the way. Again, gentlemen, I want to let you get back to convention here today. I know it's busy. Hopefully you got your walking boots on. But any last comments or thoughts you want to share with our friends tuning in here today? Key?
Yeah, I think what we all have to bear in mind in the beef cattle industry is that anything, you know, our production innovations, improvements, whether it's at the cow-calf level, whether it's, you know, sustainability or land stewardship or biodiversity, anything that improves the beef cattle sector improves our chances of succeeding with the consumer, right? Because the consumer's watching pretty carefully at, you know, at food sources, where food comes from, how is it produced, how are the animals looked after. Right, so their concerns are far beyond "I want a steak," right? And therefore, you know, as an industry, we need to be responsive to the changing consumer, and we have to be prepared to have a hard look at what we do, right? And be prepared to make the appropriate changes so that we can be a more sustainable industry. And if we do all of that, we'll do well, because it doesn't really matter how you look at it. We have the best tasting protein. All cultures across the world, give them a choice, they'll pick the beef. So that's what motivates me every day. I know we have the best product, and I'm very thrilled every day to be working in this industry.
Thanks for those comments. Calvin, Matt, anything?
It's pretty good. It's hard
it's
to follow that.
Yeah, it's hard to follow. I think he did a good job of wrapping that up. So.
But again, I appreciate the three of you joining us here today. And Key, congratulations on that induction tomorrow night in the Cattle Feeders Hall of Fame. Behave, you know, don't get too out of hand.
We won't make any promises.
Just like the AI, a lot of unknowns at this point. Well, again, for more on TELUS Agriculture, make sure and visit them online at TELUS.com/agriculture to discover how we can help drive your net profitability in your operation and learn more about how you can get in touch with their consultants as well. Well, friends, thanks for joining us for this conversation on the Cattleman's Call podcast. Until next time, I'm Lane Northland. Have a great day.
Thanks for tuning in to NCBA's Cattleman's Call podcast with Lane Nordland. For more information, visit ncba.org and make sure to subscribe to the podcast today.